So today I'm going to talk about loop models and three-dimensional bosonization. Oh, great, it's not working. Hold on. Okay, so I have to have the USB thing unplugged. So today I'm going to talk about loop models and three-dimensional bosonization with some comments on modular invariance, although it will be with about how the models we consider don't have modular invariance. So it'll mostly be about these two things. So this talk is going to be primarily based on work that I did with my advisor, Eduardo Fradkin, although I also want to point out related work using duality to study the interplay of disorder and strong interactions non-perturbatively, which I did with these collaborators. So to give some overview and philosophy behind why we're studying the things that we're studying in this talk, so as we all know, there are many mysterious phenomena observed in strongly coupled 2D quantum systems, which seem to be deeply interconnected. So there's several examples here. The first is the superuniversality of quantum Hall-Plateau transitions, or the sharing of critical exponents between the different phase transitions. In particular, it's shown here as the fact that the slopes of all these lines is a log plot of the width of the transitions, the function of temperature. And the slopes of all these lines, which correspond to different transitions, are all the same. Related to this is the emergence of particle hole symmetry in the Hatfield-Landau level, manifest here as a symmetry exchanging charge and flux across the nu equals 1 to nu equals 0 integer quantum Hall transition. And related to this is a phenomenon in a totally different system. This is a field-tuned superconductor insulator transition in thin films, but a similar sort of charge flux or current voltage type duality is observed here, in this case manifesting itself as a symmetry exchanging Cooper pairs and vortices and a particular constraint on the resistivity rho xx squared plus rho xy squared, 1 over 2 pi squared in units of h bar over e squared.
So that's 3D,
huh? 3D or 3D? This is 2D system, this is thin film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then how do you guess from
that? Sorry?
I mean, if you have 5, how do you guess from that?
This is, so, this is near the quantum critical point. This is not a finite temperature transition. Yeah. Good. And so related to this, again, is in all of these systems, actually, there's a mysterious anomalous 2D metallic phase which appears at weak disorder, which we don't understand and which seems to come from an interplay of disorder and strong interactions, and it subverts the lore that there are no metals in two dimensions. So, even on their own, these phenomena are very poorly understood. Most of our available theoretical techniques to study these sort of inherently non-perturbative phenomena are perturbative. In particular, this is not very helpful when all of the interactions seem to be order one. So the question I want to ask is, can we do better? So the way that we're going to try to do better is the idea of duality, which is the notion that two seemingly very different theories are actually secretly one and the same. In particular, in this talk, we're going to focus on infrared dualities, or dualities that say that the two theories on either side are the same at very long distances. And duality is particularly useful when it relates a strongly interacting theory to a weakly interacting one, or when it relates a theory to itself. In either case, you can get either very tight constraints or even potentially solve the theory. So, duality has a very long history in condensed matter and high energy physics. Examples include electromagnetic duality, exchanging electric charges and monopoles, leading to the idea that if there's even a single monopole in the universe, then you get flux quantization, which is observed in nature, although, of course, we haven't observed monopoles in nature. Secondly is Cramer's Wannier duality of the 2D Ising model, relating its ordered and disordered phases, or the loops in the high temperature expansion to the domain walls in the low temperature expansion. Similarly, there's a 3D version of this relating the 3D Ising ordering transition to the confinement transition in Z2 lattice gauge theory. And in addition to this, foundational to our understanding of the superconductor insulator transition is boson vortex duality, which relates to the 3D XY model, to the Deslandres-Higgs model. And in particular, this is a charge flux duality. So when the charges are insulating, the vortices are condensed and vice versa. And so superfluid phase of one theory is insulator of the other theory. In this case, which is superconductor insulator transition, superconducting phase is insulating phase of the other theory. Good. So further, there's the idea of flux attachment, which in non-relativistic theories lets us trade theories of particles for theories of composite particles with attached flux and transmuted statistics. And much more recently, and this is where we're going to have our focus today, is the idea of relativistic flux attachment, which underlies a new web of field theory dualities in 2+1 dimensions. Unlike its non-relativistic cousin, here we sort of have to account for the emergence of spin because we're dealing with relativistic theories and dualities which now involve Dirac fermions and Wilson-Fisher bosons. So going back to our list of hard problems, many of these problems have deep and intimate connections, for example, particle hole symmetry and self-duality. And duality is able to quantify these connections and leverage them to make progress. And we're going to discuss a simple way of deriving the web of dualities that I discussed at the end of the previous slide using loop models, which I'll define later. But we'll see that loop models are settings where the idea of relativistic flux attachment can be made precise. So roadmap for today. First, we'll start by motivating the web of dualities with a concrete physical example, which is the problem of the Hatfield-Landau level. And this will allow us to discuss in more detail the idea of non-relativistic flux attachment, as well as particle vortex duality. Then we're going to introduce the concept of loop models, discuss how to do flux attachment in loop models, the appearance or lack thereof of modular invariance, which I'll define later, and the emergence of fractional spin. And finally, then, we're going to derive the web of dualities using loop models. So to start, we'll give the example of the Hatfield-Landau level. So consider a 2D system of electrons and strong magnetic field. Most of us know this story. Without interactions, these electrons just fill out highly degenerate Landau levels, and we get the integer quantum Hall effect. When I turn on Coulomb interactions, I now can have fractional fillings which get incompressible states. And this leads to the fractional quantum Hall effect. But here we're going to be interested in this funny region over here near half filling, or two flux quanta in the system per electron. And this is a metallic phase, as you can see from this plot, RxX is finite. And so the problem then is to explain the existence of this metallic phase. So to do this, we're going to use, we'll start by trying to use the idea of non-relativistic flux attachment. So this relates a theory of our original electrons and magnetic field to a theory of composite particles with flux attached via Chern-Simons term in now a screened magnetic field. So when n is, when the number of fluxes attached is even, we get composite fermions. When the number of fluxes attached is odd, we get composite bosons. And in particular in these systems, because we don't have to worry about spin, we get a symmetry of statistical periodicity. So attaching two flux quanta is essentially like doing nothing at all. And this formalism was crucial in our understanding of the Jane sequences, where we were able to explain the observed Jane sequences of fractional quantum Hall states of electrons as integer quantum Hall states of composite fermions. So what happens when we try to do this for nu equals a half? So we attach two flux quantity to electrons so that the effective magnetic field now is zero, and this leads to a Fermi C of composite fermions strongly coupled to this Chern-Simons gauge field. This is the theory of Halperin, Lee, and Reed. So HLR is a very successful phenomenological theory. Composite Fermi surface is observed in quantum oscillations near nu equals a half, essentially because of, as I go away from half filling, the composite fermions feel a very small magnetic field, and so they want to have big cyclotron orbits, which you can see in oscillations in magnetoresistance. However, this theory has some problems. It has infrared divergences everywhere. In particular, you can't do RPA on this theory in a controlled way, as Sung-Sik knows very well. HLR also is not particle hole symmetric, where we define particle hole symmetry as exchange of empty and filled states, or the filling goes to one minus the filling. And this is a big problem. It's a symmetry of the lowest Landau level Hamiltonian, and it fixes the Hall conductivity to be E squared over 2H. And this very big value compared to zero, which is what HLR predicts, is what's seen experimentally. So how do we make progress here? Son noticed very recently that the nu equals a half problem for non-relativistic fermions can be mapped to an analogous problem for massless Dirac fermions, at least in the lowest Landau level limit. And so in particular, Dirac fermions in magnetic field are always particle hole symmetric. So how do you see that? Well, the Dirac fermions have an infinite number of positive and negative energy Landau levels, with one sitting at zero. And at half filling, you just fill up the zeroth Landau level by half, and you see that there's a symmetry if I just exchange the emptied and filled holes and flip over the diagram. So this led Son to conjecture a relativistic version of the composite fermion duality. So this relates a free Dirac fermion in magnetic field to QED3 at finite chemical potential, shown here in equations. This 1 over 8 pi ADA here is the parity anomaly. And we define capital A as a background field, and more notation here. So this duality is a fermion vortex duality. It relates charge to flux on either side. And the density of composite fermions is proportional to the magnetic field, unlike in HLR, where it's the same as the density of electrons. And this duality is very useful. It explains nu equals a half in a particle hole symmetric way and relates a strongly interacting theory to a free theory, although there are still several issues here. In particular, this doesn't solve the problem of infrared divergences in HLR. This side here is still a very strongly coupled theory of a Fermi surface. And so that aspect of the problem is not solved, but at least we can now have a particle hole symmetric explanation for this physics. So the question is, can we go further? Son's duality is an example of a relativistic field theory duality, which is useful in condensed matter physics. And the question is, can we relate it to any others? So as I already said, it's a fermion vortex duality, which is a cousin of the boson vortex duality I mentioned at the beginning of the talk. Which relates, again, 3dxy to abelian Higgs. In field theory language, this is like a Wilson-Fisher boson related to this abelian Higgs model here, this gauged Wilson-Fisher theory. And in particular, the mass for one for the xy model is going to be opposite sign to the mass for the abelian Higgs model. And we have this current flux identification here, again, manifesting the particle vortex duality and relationship between condensed and gapped phases. So can we deepen this connection beyond just aesthetics to the boson vortex duality? So this can happen in the non-relativistic case. We just attach an odd number of flux quanta to the fermions and get a composite boson theory. And in particular, this allows us to explain quantum Hall plateau transitions as superconductor insulator transitions of composite bosons. And also, it can be shown that self-duality of these composite bosons leads or implies at least particle hole symmetry of the composite fermion. So this could potentially explain some of the experimental connections that I discussed at the beginning. So can this type of story work for the Dirac fermion case? This is a very non-trivial question, because now we have to understand what it means to do this flux attachment for a non-relativistic theory and get emergent spin out of it. So we can conjecture that a free Dirac fermion might actually be the same as Wilson-Fisher boson plus flux anyway, and we'll try to understand this better in a little bit. So here, little A is again emergent gauge field, capital A is background gauge field. And some evidence for this relationship comes from the fact that the phase diagrams of these two theories is the same. So this Dirac fermion here undergoes, as I attune the sign of the mass, a plateau transition between the nu equals minus one and nu equals zero state. And the boson undergoes a superconductor insulator transition where the response in either phase is the same. And the mass parameters here are related in this way. So it was found by Chong and many other people, sadly Chong's not here, that this 2 plus 1d bosonization duality implies a whole web of dualities, among them the boson vortex and fermion vortex dualities that we've already met. And when extended to this critical point here, the fermions have particle hole symmetry and the bosons are self-dual. So this makes this connection between particle hole symmetry and self-duality precise. So there are already several derivations in the literature, Euclidean lattice models, wire constructions, and deformations of supersymmetric dualities in particular. However, none of these actually directly implement relativistic flux attachment using the full 2 plus 1d Chern-Simons term. These Euclidean lattice models, for example, UV complete the Chern-Simons term to a bunch of heavy lattice Dirac fermions. In the wire constructions, you're limited to being discretized in one direction. And in these supersymmetric dualities, you're sort of studying a different theory. So we're going to show how this can be done using loop models. And as a disclaimer, our derivations are going to be carried out in a phase, but near criticality, we can't prove the duality of the critical points using this technique. This is true for all of these other techniques as well. So what is a loop model? A loop model consists of variables J mu, which are like configurations of particle world lines, satisfying this divergencelessness condition, which means that they're closed. And I already said this. So the partition function looks this way. And this can be defined on the lattice or in the continuum. In this talk, we're primarily going to be living in the continuum so that we don't have to deal with lattice Chern-Simons theories, although in principle you can put these theories on lattice as well. And any gapped field theory can be written in this form. It's very nice. Yeah, you can think of this just as a many-body quantum mechanics rewriting of the original quantum field theory.
Can't open the loop?
Sorry?
Can't open the loop?
So opening a loop would correspond to like adding background fields, which you can do.
Is J integers here?
Yeah, J you can think of as an integer value, yeah. Yeah, these things satisfy charge quantization. So to give an example that we might all be familiar with is the derivation of the boson vortex duality. So crucial to this is the rewriting of the 3DXY model and Abelian Higgs model as loop models. So in particular, XY model can be written in this way. Abelian Higgs can be written in this way, loops coupled to the emergent gauge field. And in this language, then, we still have the charge flux duality written like this, this connection between the emergent gauge field and the J variable. This thing has two phases. The insulating phase corresponds to the phase where the loops are small, and the superfluid phase would correspond to where the loops are condensed. And, yeah.
In this description, where is the instant of AVU?
Sorry?
Where is the instant of AVU?
I can't hear what you're saying.
Where is the instant of AVU?
Instant.
Oh, the instanton of AVU is what. Sorry, so you can have, are you asking about monopoles? Is this, yeah, so, I mean, this thing satisfies a flux quantization condition as well, right? That links it to this J.
What is the operator corresponding to the monopole?
The operator corresponding to the monopole. So that here is going to be some non-local object, right? I mean, this is the monopole current, which I can write down. That was what you mean.
It's a charge creation.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess you need to open the loop if you want to create a monopole.
Right, right, yeah. And in field theory language, we already saw this duality. Again, I'll throw it up here.
Sorry, what is phi tilde?
Sorry?
Phi tilde enters J tilde, yes. The Abelian Higgs side, what is the scalar field when you're writing this loop language?
So in the, you can think of, good. So if I start from, say, this theory and I want to write this as a loop model, this is some amplitude times a phase. In the gapped phase, the amplitude will be kind of stiff, it won't do anything, and the phase will have some fluctuations. And then when I rewrite the theory in that language, I'll get the loops, essentially. It's roughly that's what happens.
So you like integrate out the radius of the scalar field,
yeah.
And you just keep the phase.
Exactly, yeah. So, I should add, because I didn't emphasize this before, we're going to be primarily dealing with, here, because we're in 2 plus 1D, we sort of, by default, have hardcore interactions for the bosons, for these J fields. So the loops cannot cross. And so that makes this integrating out of the amplitude a little more subtle. Good, so the models that we're going to consider are these models that were originally proposed by Eduardo and Steve Kivelson, where you start with hardcore bosons, as I already said, coupled to an emergent gauge field, a mu, with a funny looking action like this. So here's the Chern-Simons term. This is like a long range interaction that you might get if I'm coupled to a 3 plus 1D photon living in some bulk space. And if I integrate out a mu, I just get these current-current interactions. The first term, again, long-range interactions. Second term, I can think of as a linking number for the loops. And this will sort of be our way of understanding flux attachment in these theories by studying this object. And the critical points here we expect to be Wilson-Fisher bosons coupled to AMU. And also under boson vortex duality, just repeating the Peskin procedure, if I define this tau up here, then boson vortex duality maps tau to minus 1 over tau. And this is equivalent to saying that these theories are self-dual. Under duality, they map to theories of the same form. I should say that generically, though, they don't necessarily satisfy the self-duality constraint I mentioned earlier. This is, I'm using two different senses of self-duality in this talk, sadly.
Here, gauge field itself has a non-local dynamics.
Right, yeah. In principle, I could just dispense with this bulk if I don't care about locality, and then I just write down this non-local field theory.
So the theory that you wrote down there is the 2 plus 1 theory?
Yes.
And then this Wilson Fisher is, again, 2 plus 1?
Yeah. Yeah, so the matter lives on the boundary here. I might not have been clear about that. The matter doesn't live in the bulk.
Oh, but the gauge field is in...
The gauge field can be allowed to live in a bulk, where you have Maxwell plus theta. So in particular, the theta term will integrate to the boundary as Trent-Simons, and then this thing will integrate out to this funny potential. Is that clear? So now we're going to encounter modular invariants. So in the original work of Eduardo and Steve, the claim was that these loop model partition functions were expected to display invariants under this boson vortex duality, and also a periodicity transformation, which takes tau to tau plus one, and actually in this takes theta to theta plus pi for a reason I'll mention in a moment. But this was interpreted as a statistical periodicity.
Theta is, what's theta?
Oh. Sorry, so theta is defined in the slide. Good, I must have missed that statement. So theta here is like the statistical angle.
What's the relation between this theta and the capital theta?
This is the bulk theta angle. So the relationship between little theta and big theta is like, let's see, so theta equals so they're not quite the same. It's like 1 over big theta. Big theta is proportional to Trent-Simons level. I'm just missing a factor of 2 in my head, so I can't give you the explicit expression.
Oh, so small theta is 1 over capital theta?
Yeah. Yeah, so I mean, so this taken up here, you get a Trent-Simons level, which is, I think this will be capital theta over 2 pi. And so the level is so the level is capital theta over 2 pi. Statistical angle then in the absence of this long range interaction would be minus pi over that.
So the SFK and PFK are very different from the S and P dualities in the conventional sense.
Right, so in particular, these will be different from, this is why I had the subscripts. So these are different from the like Witten or Kivelson-Li-Zhang S and T transformations. So these are to be considered duality transformations in this language. But whereas like these other transformations, which maybe you've seen in like the paper by like Chong and friends, those are not necessarily duality transformations. They sort of take me through the web of dualities. Does that answer your question? Are you asking about like string theory or something?
Maybe I have some issue with the terminologies, but it's fine.
Okay, we can talk about this later if you want. Good. So what they found was that invariance under this PSL2Z implies the existence of super universal families of fixed points sharing transport properties and critical exponents. So that's, you know, this would make these theories a sort of minimal model for super universality, which would be very nice. However, invariance under periodicity, we'll see, requires a choice of regularization, which becomes inconsistent as we approach the critical point, because it dispenses with spin, essentially. There's no emergent spin in that language, and that ends up making things sick. So how do we see this? Well, we'll focus on the linking number term. It can be written more explicitly in this way. So for separate linked loops, this is just a topological invariant, and in particular, it's a multiple of 2. And it just counts the number of exchanges. So here you would get 2. And the Fradkin-Kivelson regularization only has these types of processes contributing non-trivially. They've defined their theory in such a way that all self-linking processes like here are statistically trivial. So let's focus on these types of processes. It turns out that this linking number for these guys is not automatically a topological invariant, and it depends on the regularization. So one choice is point splitting, where we define a framing, and we split the loop into a ribbon. And this is topological. It makes phi now an integer, any integer, not just an even one. But it's ambiguous, because I can split my loop into a ribbon in a variety of ways. Another regularization is just actually to not do anything. So this we'll call the fractional spin regularization. And this is not topological, but it's unambiguous. And the non-topological part of the linking number you can show is a Berry phase, written here, where e hat is the tangent vector to the loop in question. This is for a single loop, but I can define this for a whole configuration. And the importantly, this is not quantized to be an integer. So the presence of this object breaks the periodicity that we saw on the previous slide completely.
So are you saying that it's not topologically invariant because this loop can intersect?
So no, so they can't, the loops can never intersect because of the hardcore repulsion. This whole thing actually is ill-defined if the loops can cross.
So if they don't cross, is that still well-defined? Without, I don't understand this statement, why it's not topologically invariant.
So essentially, if I try to calculate this integral, so there's a, so let's focus on a single self-linking process like this. So the phi of this thing is, and I might get the sign wrong here, this is something called the writhe of this, which I can represent as the self-linking number, this is a thing from knot theory, minus this Berry phase. So this is what I get if I define a framing, so where I split this thing into a ribbon, and then it just becomes the linking of two loops. But this thing depends on the metric, and that's the sense in which it's, yeah, so this Berry phase here is metric dependent. And I might be, my overall sign here might be off.
So if you do,
yeah,
you, in the point splitting method, you said it's topological but ambiguous. What's ambiguous about it?
It's ambiguous because there are all kinds of different ways in which I can split this into a ribbon. So for example, I could do something like this, where I just rigidly split it. This is a really bad drawing. But I could also do something like this, where I sort of have these things link at a certain point. I could do this in all kinds of different ways. Yeah. So in particular, in Eduardo and Steve's regularization, there was always a rigid translation here for the framing, in such a way that you never got processes like this.
So if you don't do anything, you just take that term as it is, like fractional spin. So
yeah.
So what's the problem with doing that?
So there's no, there's, we'll see that this is the right way of doing it.
Which one?
The fractional spin way.
Well, doing nothing.
Yeah, the next slide will explain why point splitting is bad as I approach the quantum critical point.
Maybe you were mentioning this, but nothing else here. So it's ambiguous if you do point splitting.
Right.
I guess meaning phi of j will have different values when you do different types of point splitting.
Mm-hmm.
But is the difference between all those different values kind of context.
In the sense, I think what you're asking is, like, if I define a particular framing, is that consistent through the whole? Is that, like, a consistent way of counting these linkings, right? Maybe I don't understand your question, actually.
That's one part of the question.
Yeah.
The other part, just you have drawn two different ways of doing one
story, right,
where one differs from the other by having one more small twist.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm asking whether this contribution from this one more twist is somehow quantized.
Yeah, it'll be quantized. Yeah.
Then if I ask something like e to the I phi j, this e to the I, this explanation may be well defined, maybe unambiguous. You say that?
Well, the thing is, there are like an infinite number of ways for me to do this. I mean, yeah, so these two will differ by like a constant.
Yeah,
but there's no canonical way for me to do this in general.
But let's say the constant is 2 pi, then in the past integral.
Oh, but it's not 2 pi. It can be odd.
But can you multiply some constant to make it 2 pi?
No, I don't think you can do that. No, you can't just this is a non-trivial thing.
But it's quantized.
Yeah. Right. Right. Because this whole in this language, this is just a regular linking number, which is always quantized.
Is it right that this term is obtained by integrating out the gauge field in the presence of Chern-Simons term?
Yes.
Okay. Chern-Simons action is you don't need the metric.
Right. Well, this is sort of so. This is the what I'm really discussing here is the concept of the framing anomaly. So, in the deep in the gapped phase, if I'm just talking about Chern-Simons, then you're right. I can sort of make it topological by doing this point splitting. But that's sort of a choice of regularization, and so because that's related to regularization, it's referred to as the framing anomaly.
You said that depends on metric here, right? That phi.
This term.
Phi term.
Right. If I do nothing, if the regularization doesn't involve any point splitting.
Then it depends on metric.
Yes.
Where does that come from? The Chern-Simons term doesn't depend on metric, but. And then J dot A term. That's also independent of metric.
Right, but. That's not the point is that that's not true for these self-linking processes. It's only true for these types of processes. This is kind of a subtle thing. We could discuss it later. But this was discussed in detail in Witten's original Chern-Simons paper. But yeah, it's strange because you would expect from the action that the Chern-Simons term doesn't depend on the geometry. But the amplitude associated with this process can depend on the geometry.
So it also came from Chern-Simons term plus J.
Yeah, it's buried in there. It's
A-faced, yeah, J. Yeah. And Chern-Simons term.
Right.
And none of them depends on H.
Well, the point is that it secretly does for this particular type of thing. We could discuss this in more detail later. So, why is one regularization better? It turns out that point splitting is inconsistent in relativistic theories, as I already said. And we might actually have expected this from the spin statistics theorem. If I try to attach flux in a relativistic context, then you would need to account for the emergence of spin, otherwise you would violate the spin statistics theorem. So in particular, it turns out that it's impossible to do point splitting with Maxwell terms present. And these sort of lead to a spreading of the flux that I've attached to a particular world line. So that this length scale is always bigger than the length scale of whatever framing you define. So the framing So you always, instead of getting the topological invariant that you would have gotten from point splitting, you always get the term with this extra twist factor, or fractional spin. And it turns out that these that Maxwell terms you really have to have as criticality is approached. And you can see this from the duality perspective, because the Maxwell term is going to be related to the kinetic term for the matter fields in the dual theory. So you can't, under the duality, you can't tune both sides to zero. So now that we've found that there's an emergence of spin in these theories, can we connect now to the 3D Bose-Nezation duality relating Gage, Wilson, Fisher to a free Dirac? So it turns out that this was done many, many years ago by Polyakov, who showed that fractional spin converts a gapped scalar with a unit of flux attached to it to a gapped Dirac fermion at long distances. And this leads to a loop model representation of the Dirac functional determinant with statistical angle plus or minus pi, shown here. So first, why do I have this sign m up here? So Polyakov's derivation can only be carried out on the gapped variables, because these are the only guys who see an un-Higgs'd Chern-Simons. And so when we want to consider the condensed phase, we have to do the derivation for the vortex variables, which see a statistical angle, which is the same but of opposite sign. So that's why you have this sign m. And Polyakov's derivation had some problems, though. In his derivation, he never said that the bosons were hardcore, meaning that their world lines could cross. But actually, this is sort of an error. Phi is ill-defined in those cases. And so the bosons, therefore, really should be Wilson-Fisher. They should have strong hardcore repulsion. And also, there was no coupling to background fields, leading to the question of, can this derivation really account for the parity anomaly?
So what is small m?
Oh, small m is related to big M, but they're not quite the same. This is, you can think of it like the tuning away from criticality on the bosonic side.
Just capital M, just on the left hand side.
Right.
It's proportional to capital
M. Yeah, related, yeah. Yeah, it's somewhat complicated, so I didn't want to write it. So I called this a
line. Just the length of word line in Euclidean space.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so for very large loops, then this thing gets suppressed. And so this ensures the convergence of the partition function.
And where is the information about spin here on the right-hand side?
So the information about spin is going to come from this presence of the linking number.
Meaning this phase top.
Yes.
If I have done this for spin 3/2, for example.
I'm going to get to that at the very end of the talk. So that's actually a really interesting question. So if I try it, so in 2+1d, higher spin particles like that are non-propagating, right? So you would expect to get something potentially trivial there. But the point is that actually, trying to do that doesn't correspond to studying a like non-interacting theory of a spin three-half particle.
Yeah, kind of
I can have like
non-interacting.
Yeah, yeah. So you get essentially a strongly coupled Chern-Simons matter theory involving Dirac's if I try to do that in this language. That's a very good question. So we can add the background gauge fields very easily. On the bosonic side, and this is automatically gauge invariant with no anomaly because it's just bosons. And indeed, it's possible to show that you get, when you do that, the Dirac functional determinant with the right parity anomaly term, so the whole thing is gauge invariant. And this leads to a final loop model action for the free Dirac fermion written here. And in field theory language, this duality is none other than the 3D Bose-Nezation duality. So we can now try and derive more dualities with this. So our strategy is to start with a proposed duality and write down a bosonic loop model representation of each side using the 2 plus 1 D bosonization duality. Use path integral manipulations then to equate the two loop model partition functions in the phase where the loops are gapped. And then use boson vortex duality to match each side of the critical point. It's related to the sign of M that I mentioned a couple slides ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the previous one. So on the left-hand side, we have a Dirac Fermi couples to, say, probing external
Neural gauge
field.
Yep.
And then on the right-hand side, that gauge field still couples to the current of this form. That is AJ term.
Right.
So what are the other terms?
So good. So this is the coupling of the world line to the probe field. This is the fractional spin term.
That was already there.
That was already there. That's not affected. This is like the parity anomaly. So like here on the bosonic side, there's no improperly quantized Chern-Simons, which is why I have this minus over here. But this is the thing which gives you the fermion functional determinant over here. This is this minus ADA over 8 pi is this thing which I had to multiply the partition function by. And when I make this Dirac fermion heavy and try to integrate it out, I get this one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that has the information about UV complexity theory.
Right.
So you're saying positive M is the trivial state.
Yes. This is describing a plateau transition. Yeah. Good. So we can now derive a... Yeah, good. I already said all these things. So now we can try and derive Sonne's duality. So we start with the free Dirac fermion. And this is a funny way of writing the QED3 theory. I'm just using properly quantized Chern-Simons terms because that plays more nicely with the loop model language where charges are quantized. So here, I just used the formula from a couple slides ago. And that gives me this loop model action in the, this is in the phase, which is trivial. Then over here, I give the mass an opposite sign, and so I get this loop model written over here like this. And because of the charge quantization of the J variables, I can integrate out little a without violating flux quantization at all. And that actually will take me back to this theory deriving the duality. This is the simplest derivation I know of this duality. This can be done in the other, oh, by the way, this can be done in the other phase very easily as well. I just haven't shown it. It's only a couple of lines, very compact. So this goes back to Sung-Sik's question from earlier. What is the fermionic dual, say, for a theory where you might expect like a fractional spin of 3/2 or something? So this is a generic Chern-Simons matter theory. Also, I've added back in this long-range interaction. So we can define this tau variable, tau sub phi, like this. And it can be shown using these loop model techniques, although it's a little more complicated than the previous slide, so I don't show it explicitly, that this thing is dual to a theory of Dirac fermions coupled to an emergent gauge field, B mu, characterized by a new tau, where these factors of 2 are due to the again, the funny quantization that you get for Dirac fermions, for Chern-Simons levels. And then this leads to a relationship between the taus for the two different theories. So essentially, this is related then to a theory of Dirac fermions now strongly interacting with a new emergent gauge field characterized by this tau psi. And in particular, then, what this means is that you don't get a theory of non-interacting particles of some strange spin if I try and, say, eliminate this term to shift k phi, so I might get theory of spin 3/2. Instead, you get a new strongly interacting theory. So to summarize, we considered a family of relativistic loop models in 2 plus 1D, coupled to Chern-Simons gauge fields, by showing that relativistic flux attachment transmutes both statistics and spin. We derived members of the recent web of field theory dualities, including Sonne's fermion vortex duality. And this is the first derivation of these of this web of dualities, which really implements the relativistic flux attachment in a simple and transparent way. So can we do better? We can try and derive even more dualities with loop models. So we only discussed single matter species and abelian gauge fields, but there are, of course, more dualities involving non-abelian gauge fields, more matter fields, and so on. And these theories have been proposed to describe deconfined quantum critical points, and also as examples of super-universal plateau transitions. So it's important to understand these things better. And there are also interesting proposals for bounds on the number of matter species for which boson-fermion duality is possible, which we can explore using loop models. So yeah, loop model derivations for all these things should be possible. Really what it requires, though, is a detailed analysis of the short-range interactions, because now with more matter fields, essentially the potential for the scalars can have some more symmetry associated with it, which we have to implement carefully. Also it requires developing interacting models of non-abelian anionic loops, which to my knowledge, nothing like that has ever been done, and so this would be very interesting. Usually when we talk about anions, we're talking about very gapped non-dynamical objects, whereas here we would really need to be talking about anions which have some dynamics. So finally, I'll just end with a closing puzzle related to the example of the half-filled Landau level that I showed you earlier. So we saw that relativistic flux attachment transmutes both statistics and spin, breaking statistical periodicity as a symmetry. But and in HLR, the compressible states, which appear now not at nu equals a half, but nu equals 1 over 2n, are all connected by periodicity of non-relativistic flux attachment. But this doesn't obviously extend to Sonne's direct composite fermion theory. And more weird is that experiments actually indicate a particle hole-like reflection symmetry at nu equals a quarter, which is not apparent in the lowest Landau level Hamiltonian. So this is manifest in this plot here, which I sort of discussed at the beginning, the analog in the nu equals 1 to nu equals 0 case. And you, indeed, you get this charge flux or current voltage exchange symmetry across the quantum critical point. So this is very mysterious. This is not a symmetry of the lowest Landau level Hamiltonian. How does this emerge? And it seems maybe connected to the particle hole symmetry of Sonne's theory, but we have to explain that. So can we derive a theory of these states which is in a unified framework with Sonne's theory? It explains the symmetry and doesn't require periodicity or doesn't invoke it. That's something that will be coming around very soon. We've made a fair amount of progress on this. So thank you.
Spin 3 half theory, just like you have a flavor 1 condition with like level 2 transcendence.
Yeah, so it would be like quote unquote fractional spin 3 halves. You know, it has this like funny Berry phase term, which would be like the Berry phase term for a spin 3 halves particle, but there are no free spin 3 halves particles. So it's this new strongly interacting theory. Yeah.
The derivation of these 2D of the dualities among the 2D theories starts with a 3D bulk is this important?
Yeah, so I never used the bulk here, really. That's what
Do you have to use one?
So if you don't want to use properly quantized Chern-Simons levels, then you need the bulk, formally speaking. But otherwise, or like if you want a local theory. But it really didn't enter into any of this.
So you also mentioned in your talk, but this using Polyakov's duality
mm-hmm.
works deep in the gap phase.
Yeah.
When void line don't intersect.
Right.
When the void line is very dilute.
Yeah.
But as you approach the critical point, what is the statement? Is that
as long as I have a finite mass, I can do the Polyakov story. So I can be close to criticality, but
yeah,
not like...
Suppose we want to extend this to the...
Right. So there the loops become large and fractal-like, and I don't know how to...
Can one still say the measure for self-intersecting void line is still very small, can be ignored in the path integration, so that this can be extended, or this can be... Or what is the...
I think the problem is less with the self-intersections, which will be just avoided by the scalar self-interactions or the hardcore repulsion.
The amplitude is really defined as it is, right?
Right.
So,
yeah. So I don't think that as I approach the critical point, the problem is not that I'll necessarily get self-intersections. It's that now I'm summing over bigger and bigger loops. And so it's not clear that... the partition function converges in this case, right? The critical point is asymptotic.
Right, that's a harder dynamical question. I'm asking more kinematic
okay.
question, whether the amplitude is well defined for each configuration of void line of...
It should be. I think the amplitude is still well defined. It's a weird question, though, because so in the phase, this equation makes sense because I get this sign.
Phi defined, phi of j.
So because of this sign m, that's what I was about to say. Is that sort of in that sense.
But phi of j itself has...
phi of j itself is fine. It's just sort of, in order to make this work, the bosons need to have a mass. In order to write down the world line path integral at all, I think that you still need the mass.
Phi of j, I thought... as you said there, the self-linking number is not well defined, right?
Right.
So the first term on the right-hand side is not well defined.
You mean for intersecting loops? Yeah, that's true. But that's a question, what I'm saying is that that's a sort of different issue than like why you can't extend this to the critical point necessarily. We hope that you can, but you know, it's subtle. I think what you're asking is about why you can't necessarily do this like near like the Gaussian fixed point or something.
So I guess my real question is, suppose we modify this definition such that it remains well defined for any n and for any configuration of
right.
world lines, right?
Right.
Such that away from the critical point, it agrees with this
yeah.
in the low energy.
Right.
But maybe different ways of regularizing the theory give different kinds of theory at the critical point.
Yes, and that'll be related to like the intersection, whether or not the loops can intersect.
Right.
Yeah.
Then that probably means the source duality corresponds to a particular way of regularizing. I mean, if you want to extend the duality to the critical point.
Or I mean, I think that's a correct statement. There is a big regularization dependence here. You know, I had to regularize this in such a way that I get the fractional spin term. You know, in particular, the original models of Eduardo and Steve as lattice models seem well defined, but at the same time, it also seems like defining a quantum critical point governed by Wilson-Fisher plus Chern-Simons for these things is inconsistent with that regularization. So you can ask the question of what their theory is as you approach the critical point. And I think we ultimately just decided that theory wouldn't make sense. We don't know how to write anything like that down. Maybe it's a first order transition. Probably, well, shouldn't be a first order transition. Yeah, it's not clear.
So in the divergence, how to match local operators of those two theories?
So the operator mapping is the same as the operator mapping.
Yeah, but how can I say it from your derivation?
Ah, so you're just asking about Sans duality? Or so in let's so in particular here, this probe A, here it couples to the matter current for phi, or not phi, psi. Here it's coupling to this dB. But I can imagine being violating flux quantization, and instead of integrating out A first in the loop model, integrating out B first, and then I just get the usual relation between the current on this side and the flux of little a on this side. So the operator relation is the same, and the relation between the mass operators is the same just because I've, that's the only way that you get the matching for these loop models. Does that answer your question, or were you asking something? Okay.
Okay, let's think hard enough.